This is Growing Pulse Crops, and I'm your host, Tim Hamrich. Today, we're talking about weed resistance with NDSU weed scientist, Dr. Brian Jenks.
I've been polling farmers this winter, and the most common answer I get is about 80%. Farmers think about 80% of their kochia is Roundup resistant. So it's a majority of the kochia. And we know that there's group 14 resistance out there to aim and sharpen. So if we want to control kochia in a burn down, we need to know if aim and sharpen is going to work for us.
Dr. Brian Jenks is a weed scientist at North Dakota State University based in Minot, so in the western half of the state there. He's been in this role since 1997, and over that time has seen an alarming rise in resistance to many of our herbicides from certain weeds, especially in kochia. Today, Brian and I talk about the resistance problem and some of the work underway to help farmers manage these weeds that are getting tougher and tougher each year to control. We'll also mention an exciting new offering from the Ag Genotyping Center to identify resistance, which is going to be the focus of our next episode. So just a little teaser for that there. First, though, Brian's going to set the stage for weed resistance problems that he's seeing with growers in North Dakota.
We're mostly dealing with Roundup resistant kochia, which started happening probably about a dozen years now. But then we're starting to see kochia that's tolerant to dicamba, as well as stearine. And the biggest one, which is going to be really challenging for us, is group 14 resistance, which means herbicides like AIM, Sharpen, Spartan, Valor. We rely on those herbicides a lot for controlling kochia in multiple crops. So for a no-till farmer, this is a big deal. Because specifically in pulse crops, we can't use dicamba or 2,4-D in front of pulse crops. We're limited to like Roundup, AIM, Sharpen, Gramoxone. And if we've got resistance to AIM, Sharpen, and Roundup, that basically leaves us with Gramoxone only.
You know, it sounds like that might be the only option. So is a farmer's only choice right now basically to use that until it runs into the same issue?
Yes. Now, not every farmer has Roundup resistance, but I've been polling farmers this winter, and the most common answer I get is about 80%. Farmers think about 80% of their kochia is Roundup resistant. So it's a majority of the kochia. And we know that there's group 14 resistance out there to aim and sharpen. So if we want to control kochia in a burn down, we need to know if AIM and Sharpen is going to work for us. If it's not, then Gramoxone is our only option.
Right. And in order to know that, what's a farmer have to do other than just to try the product and see if it works or not? Or is that what they have to do?
Well, starting about next month, there will be one additional option. So what happened was we sent this kochia to BASF, and they shipped the kochia to their headquarters in Germany. And they were able to determine that there is a mutation, a target site mutation, that is the cause of this resistance. And so with that knowledge of what that specific mutation is, the National Agricultural Genotyping Center in Fargo is developing a rapid test where you can just take a couple of leaves and submit it to them, and in a couple of weeks, they can tell you if your kochia has that genetic mutation or not. So that would be really convenient to be able to use that test to know quickly if the kochia you're dealing with has the mutation.
And I mean, it sounds like any discussion about what your options are when you do have this resistance basically is pretty short, because it's like, hey, you have Gramoxone and not much else. But outside of chemical options, are growers adjusting any cultural practices or anything else that might help fight this resistance?
They are, and they should. What we find is the more diverse your crop rotation is, the better. And lentil growers and pea growers know that they need a diverse rotation because they've been dealing with disease for several years. And so they know they can't just grow lentils or peas every other year. They've got to widen that rotation. And so we find that if we can get 3, 4, even 5 crops in a rotation to diversify, where we can possibly get some cool season versus warm season crops, maybe some short versus long season, and get more diversity in there that way. Maybe even in some cases a fall versus spring planted crop, so that the weed isn't seeing the same crops and herbicides at the same time every year. So that's the biggest thing I think we can do, is diversify the crops. And then also we can diversify the different modes of action that we have available to us.
And is there any hope for new modes of action hitting the market, or is it kind of we have what we have?
Right now it's about what we have, what we have. And to my knowledge and talking to companies, I don't see anything coming in the next several years. If anything's going to come, it's going to be probably more than 5 years. But it's so difficult and expensive to develop these products that the chances of landing the silver bullet is just really slim.
Right. Well, what about trying to, you know, kind of optimize the efficacy in terms of operations and logistics, you know, using enough water and correct adjuvants? Can you just talk to that, trying to get the most out of the products you are using?
Yeah, so we certainly encourage farmers to use best practices when it comes to spray applications, you know, making sure that we're using enough water. We know that with spraying 5 gallons of water, you're getting inferior weed control. You're just not getting enough coverage. And kochia is a weed that really needs coverage because it's got a lot of growing points on the plant, and then it's very hairy. And so you need good coverage to get through those hairs to get the herbicide into the plant. So coverage is a big issue. So we would much rather see 10 gallons per acre or even more if possible to get better coverage. Spray droplet size. You know, we use a lot of dicamba here in the state for dicamba soybeans. And with those nozzles, we're using very large droplets. Well, for kochia, we're actually better off using a medium-sized droplet to get better coverage. Travel speed. We want farmers to slow down. And I know that there are some applicators that are going over 20 miles an hour because they've got a lot of acres to cover. But if we can slow down to less than 15, I think we're going to be getting better coverage overall. There's some other factors such as size. Kochia size is a big deal. We've seen over and over in our studies that if we can be spraying kochia when it's less than 3 inches tall, we get significantly better control. So I think those are two of the biggest factors: kochia size, water volume. If we can do those things better, we can generally get 80, 90, 100% control of kochia with some of these other modes of action. But unfortunately, if we have true resistance, you know, say with the group 14s or glyphosate, you know, increasing the rate isn't going to help. If we've got the true mutation, none of these other factors are going to help. We're going to have to use a different mode of action.
Right. And it sounds like in some cases we're down to one.
Exactly. Well, in a burn down situation. Okay. So in Western North Dakota, we're primarily 99% no-till. And so we rely on herbicides to control the weeds just prior to planting or just after planting. Now, in other crops, we do have other options. And so that's where we need to, in crop, in other crops, make sure that we utilize different modes of action. And I, in meetings, you know, I've given examples of where, you know, if you just have a 2-year crop rotation and you're using, say, Starring in your wheat and Liberty in your canola, and you do that over and over again, that's just 2 modes of action. Well, if you diversify with other crops and other herbicides, we can get 6, 7 different modes of action in that, say, a 4-year rotation instead of just relying on 2 or 3.
It makes a lot of sense and gets back to your point earlier about, you know, diversifying that rotation and giving you more tools in the toolbox that way. Let's talk about lentils specifically. I'm hearing that some farmers are asking about where they can put lentils in terms of herbicide history. So maybe could you start just talking about that a little bit?
Yeah, lentils are one of the more sensitive crops that we have in our rotation out here, and we have to be careful with certain herbicides. You know, usually we're preceding lentil with wheat, and so we have to be careful in our wheat applications, especially if we're in a dry cycle. So herbicides that we have to be careful with would include something like Everest, which can carry over to lentil. Husky or Talonor type products can carry over to lentil. Anything with wide match with clopyrrolid in it. Those are probably three or four of the products that we have to be careful with in wheat, and knowing that we may or may not be able to come back to lentil following those herbicides, especially if, again, with dry conditions. Now, with Everest, can't remember the exact number of months. I think it's 11 or 12 with Everest, something like that. If you get a dry summer, dry fall, that herbicide is not going to break down, and so you're not going to be able to come back to lentil. So those are the carryover issues that we have with lentil. Now, as far as what growers can use in lentil, historically, a lot of our lentil growers have used Valor in the fall. And Valor has been very beneficial for us. It has helped us control winter annuals, like prickly lettuce, false chamomile, narrowleaf hawksbeard. But then it also, if we're applying it as late as possible, it also helps us with the kochia that emerges in the spring. Well, that has worked for us for quite a few years, but unfortunately now, some of this kochia is now resistant to Valor. So growers have to be aware of that issue. Another option for a soil-applied herbicide would be Sonalan. Sonalan is an old herbicide. We used to use Sonalan all the time in lentils and apply it as late as possible in the fall, spread it as granules. You don't have to mechanically incorporate it. You can spread the granules, say, in late October when the temperatures are less than 50, and so that it doesn't volatilize and it doesn't photodegrade. And then you can go over the field with a rotary hoe or a harrow just to get some incorporation, but you're relying mostly on the snow to move the Sonalan granules into the soil. And Sonalan does give us some suppression of kochia. It's not 95% control, but it's probably 60 to 80% suppression, which is significant. Okay, and then after applying the Sonalan in the fall, you'd come back in the spring. Historically, we would do a Roundup burndown. Well, we know Roundup isn't working for us near as much as it used to. So we would tank mix with something else, like an AIM or a Sharpen. Those two products work for us, and it's still working for some people. You know, some people like AIM, some people like Sharpen. Sharpen's probably a little bit more effective, but it also costs a little bit more too. So that's what we would do typically in a burndown situation. Now, because of this group 14 resistance with AIM and Sharpen, farmers may need to look at using Gramoxone instead to start the season clean with Gramoxone, which actually does a very good job on kochia. We certainly see better results, again, on smaller weeds and if the temperature is warm. Now, I always say with any herbicide, but in particular Gramoxone, there's no silver bullet for 50 degrees. You know, we need warmer temperatures for the plants to be actively growing. And if those plants are actively growing and we've got temperatures maybe the upper 60s, even 70s, Gramoxone has worked very well for us in a burn down.
And what about for Sonalan and the fall applied, what types of conditions are going to change the efficacy of those applications?
With Sonalan and with any fall applied herbicide, probably one of our biggest issues is crop residue. We really need to spread our residue evenly so that you don't have big clumps out there, because we need that herbicide to be able to fall through the residue and get to the soil. And if we've got these big piles, obviously, you know, the granules are going to get caught up in those piles of residue. So if we've got evenly spread residue, the granules should be able to fall to the soil. The rain or snow moves the granules into the soil. And because Sonalan is not very water soluble, it will stay on the soil surface. I mean, it will stay in that top inch. It's not going to move. And that's where we need it to be, because kochia emerges, you know, right on the surface. And so we need that soil land to be right on the surface where the kochia is emerging or germinating in the spring.
And it does sound like, you know, kochia is enemy number one. Are there other weeds that are, you know, second tier in terms of resistance concern that we should be proactive in how we're managing them now so we don't get to that same place that we are with kochia?
In the western part of the state where we've got the pulse crops, probably our next biggest challenge is green foxtail. And a lot of our green foxtail is resistant to our group one and group two herbicides that we use in wheat, like Puma, Axial, Discover. Those are our group ones. Group twos would be like Varro, Everest, and Gold Sky. We do have some foxtail that's resistant to just group ones or group twos. We have some foxtail that's resistant to both. That's a challenge for us. In lentil, historically, we've used post-emergence, we've used Assure 2 and Select or Quizalofop Fop and Clethodim to control grasses in lentil or in any of the pulse crops. But now we've got a lot of foxtail that's resistant to Assure 2. We have considerably less resistance going on with Select or Clethodim. And so most farmers in the state use Select or Clethodim. There really isn't that much Assure 2 used anymore because of that. But this is also where the Sonalan comes in, is because Sonalan, we apply that in the fall, it will help control the foxtail that emerges in the spring. And it is a different mode of action. Sonalan is a group 3 instead of a 1 or 2. And so the Sonalan will not only help with kochia, but it also helps with green foxtail. As far as other weeds that are of concern, you know, we don't have Palmer and water hemp in the western part of the state, so we're not dealing with those. One other one that we do have a challenge with is horseweed. Some people call it mare's tail. And we certainly do have horseweed in the western part of the state. And the challenge there with horseweed is that a lot of our horseweed is Roundup resistant. So horseweed is a winter annual. And so it will emerge in the fall, germinate and emerge in the fall. It'll be in the form of a rosette in the fall. And that is the best time to attack horseweed. Because if we let it overwinter and then it starts to elongate, starts to send up a stalk in the spring, it's much harder to control. Usually what we will do to attack horseweed is we can use a 2,4-D or dicamba or a Sharpen. Usually one of those three are quite effective in the fall to control horseweed. Now, the challenge comes with horseweed is horseweed will only germinate and emerge if you get rain. And so let's say you decide to go out there October 1st and spray 2,4-D dicamba Sharpen. Well, the horseweed may not be emerged yet. So, you know, trying to time that application when those weeds are emerging is difficult. Well, that's where Valor has come in the past, is because if you put Valor on early enough, then it will control horseweed as it's germinating. So you kind of have two different targets with Valor. If you're targeting winter annuals like horseweed, you want to apply the Valor earlier, say mid-September. If you're targeting kochia that germinates and emerges in the spring, then you want the Valor applied later in the season in maybe mid-October. So those are for resistance that we're dealing with in the West, primarily kochia, green foxtail, and horseweed.
Well, it makes sense. And you know, given the a lot of farms are in a tougher economic situation today than they were maybe 2 or 3 years ago, is there any temptation or concern with changing up their weed management program to try to save costs, or is that not something that usually fluctuates with the farm economy?
Well, unfortunately, because of the resistant situation, it's almost requiring growers to maybe spend a little bit more money to be proactive. If anything, if they can rotate to certain crops where you've got other herbicide options. In soybean, we've got a few more options than we do, say, in peas and lentils. If a grower can grow corn, you know, that gives us another option. One herbicide, though, that has really helped us and can help us more is metribuzin. You know, it used to be known as Syncor. Now we just call it metribuzin because that's the active ingredient name. And it has different trade names. But metribuzin can be used in peas and lentils and soybean. And it is very good on kochia. Now, it's not good on emerged kochia. If you spray it on emerged kochia, it's not going to control it. It has to be in the soil, activated, and then it will control kochia as it's germinating. We use it primarily in the spring. Say you're applying it with your Roundup and AIM or Sharpen and put metribuzin down with those herbicides. So hopefully your AIM, Sharpen, Roundup will control anything that's emerged, and your metribuzin will help control anything that emerges later. One other benefit that we see from metribuzin, if a grower is using gramoxone, there is a synergism between gramoxone and metribuzin. We see enhanced control. We've seen this not only with kochia, but other weeds. With those two different modes of action, they seem to work better together and enhance control of emerged weeds. So if you do use gramoxone, you tank mix it with metribuzin, you get a little bit of enhanced control, plus the residual of the metribuzin to help control anything that emerges later.
I'm glad you mentioned that. That wasn't on my radar, and so that's really helpful. I mean, it could be really helpful to a lot of people in that regard.
Yeah, certainly peas and lentils. Unfortunately, you know, with chickpeas, metribuzin isn't labeled here in North Dakota in chickpeas. It is labeled in the PNW and in Canada. It's just not labeled here in North Dakota.
Why is that?
My hunch is it's because we maybe tend to get a little bit more rainfall in some areas. You know, the PNW, they got some higher rainfall areas, but that's my only assumption, is because they're concerned about rainfall. And that is the thing I should mention with metribuzin, is the label warns if you're expecting a heavy rain soon after application, then don't apply it. Wait till, if you can possibly apply it after the rain, because metribuzin is very water soluble. It will move. And lentils are and peas can be a little bit more sensitive, way more sensitive than soybean. So if you get a heavy rain right after application and it moves it down, you can see some lentil injury or pea injury. But that also depends on your soil characteristics. And that's where I stress that every farmer needs to be familiar with each field to know what their pH, organic matter, and texture is. Because that will determine, the pH, organic matter, and texture will determine what rate of metribuzin you should use, and if you should use it at all. Because the metribuzin label says that it shouldn't be applied to sandy soils. If you've got, a sandy loam or a loamy sand, you probably shouldn't use it in that soil. But if you've got a little bit heavier soil, like a loam or a silt loam, you should be just fine. But that also depends on what your pH is. If you've got a pH of 8.2 and a low organic matter, then that's going to be a little bit more risky. The pH of 8.2, organic matter 2.0, that's going to be a little more risky. But if you have a pH of 6.5 and organic matter 3, then that's less risky. So the metribuzin is very sensitive to pH and organic matter.
Is there a tool to determine rate based on those factors? It seems like a complex sort of equation. It's not so straightforward.
It kind of is. The Spartan label actually has a table to designate, you know, the rate based on your texture and your organic matter and pH. But metribuzin doesn't have a table like that. And so that's why I just say, first of all, don't apply it in a sandy soil. Make sure it's at least a loam or heavier. And then your risk increases as pH increases. and as organic matter decreases. And the lower the pH, the higher the organic matter, the less your risk.
Well, you've been doing this for, you know, well over 25 years now. And so you've seen the challenges mount with resistance and weed control. You, what continues to keep you optimistic here that we're going to kind of stay ahead of this stuff?
Well, in order to stay ahead of it, we're going to have to diversify, as we've talked earlier. The worst thing we can do is probably a two-year rotation where we're using the same herbicides and same crops over and over. I'm optimistic if we can diversify our crops to get a minimum of 3, 4, 5 crops in the rotation, and then using 5, 6, 7 different modes of action with our herbicides. If we can do that, if we can use the cool season versus warm season crops, long season versus short season, fall versus spring, diversify crops, get 5, 6, 7 different modes of action that will control kochia, then I'm more optimistic.
Great, Brian. Well, as we wrap up here, I just kind of call this our takeaway section. So anything either that you'd want to emphasize that we talked about as a takeaway, or any takeaways you'd want to add before we stop recording here?
Probably the biggest suggestion I would have is when growers are doing their burn down application, they are so busy, they don't really have time to come back to that field and look at it, but they really should. You know, make your burn down application, and then about 7 to 10 days later, come back and see if that kochia died or not. If it didn't die, then you should probably take some of that kochia, send it to the genotyping center in Fargo and have it tested for resistance. And so I think being more proactive about monitoring how effective our applications are. Farmers are so busy, they apply their burn down, then they probably don't look at the field for 4 weeks historically. And I understand that. But if that kochia isn't burned down in the beginning, by the time you come back in 4 weeks, that kochia might be 4 or 6 inches tall. And so that's why we need to do some early season monitoring. And if we do that, I think that'll definitely help us.
All right. Well, that is going to do it for today's episode. Thank you very much to Dr. Brian Jenks for taking the time to be on the show today. That rapid test by the National Ag Genotyping Center that will be available very soon is the topic of our next episode. So make sure you're a subscriber to the Growing Pulse Crops podcast so you don't miss that episode on DNA testing with Zach Bateson.
Growers can send us kochia. We can genotype them for the resistance to group 14. And then they're able to have a discussion with either their agronomists or other consultants to see whether it can be another actionable spraying opportunity, or there's something else that they can do about these resistant weeds.
Again, make sure you subscribe to the show so you don't miss that episode. The Growing Pulse Crops podcast series is produced by Dr. Audrey Kalile and myself in collaboration with the Pulse Crops Working Group. The show is made possible thanks to the generous support of our sponsors, the Northern Pulse Growers Association, the North Central IPM Center, USDA NIFA, and the USA Dry Pea and Lentil Council. We're releasing these episodes twice per month throughout the season, and we want to make sure the information stays relevant to you. So if you're finding it useful, we'd love it if you'd leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or both. And feel free to tweet us anytime by using the hashtag GrowingPulseCrops. We'll be back with another great episode in a couple weeks.